evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 9, 2019. Unknown gunmen attack a student at Juba University.
The security is very bad because there are no police personnel that can actually patrol or that can sub-guide the students at night.
And traders accused Juba City Council officials for imposing fake taxes on traders.
For City Council to enter into the work of Chamber of Commerce and say don't charge or register business traders, this is not its work.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Unknown gunmen shot and wounded a female student at Juba University student hostel this week, prompting some students to demand for security at the student hostels on campus. A student representative says visitors to student hostels are not screened. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
27-year-old Maria Gao, a fourth-year student of Social and Economic Studies at the University of Juba, was shot by an unidentified gunman at the university hostel earlier this week. Speaking on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal from the authorities, one of Agao's relatives says Agao was half asleep when she saw strangers in her hostel. She screamed, and after a brief exchange with the attackers, they opened fire, shooting Agao twice on her thighs and the chest. Agao is receiving treatment from the gunshot at the military hospital in Juba. Wilson Mayer is a student representative. He says there are no security checkpoints at the main entrance to the student hostels. He blames the university administration for failing to protect students. Mayer says students residing in the university hostels live in fear.
The security is very bad because there are no police personnel that can actually patrol or that can sub-guide the students at night. As up to now, there are no security personnel provided. Since the problem happened, the university administration did not take measures to make sure that police personnel are brought in the hostel. We are not talking about the hostel of the ladies. Even we the boys, our hostels, there are no security personnel also. Even the gate in Ramkiel hostel, there is no big gate there.
Mayor says the university administration has ordered students not to speak to the media about the shooting at the hostel.
It is illegal to say that don't talk to media house. Do they want us to die like that? And we cannot talk. And we are appealing to the university administration. If anything happen again, the BC is responsible for that because he is responsible for us.
The student leader says some unidentified gunmen also attacked students at the boys' hostel last week. Mayor says the university administration should ask the government to intervene and prevent more attacks on students living on campus. A lawmaker in South Sudan Transitional National Legislative Assembly is demanding answers from the Ministries of Higher Education and Interior. Nyayang Johnson, who represents Bia State at the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says she wonder why there are no police presence at the University of Juba campus.
Juba University is in the middle of the city. How could a gunman get into the hostel and shoot and go back without any security protection around? Because even if you see the road that going to Juba University outside, there are soldiers outside. As mothers, we don't feel comfortable with what took place. We want the minister to explain to us, and we want also the minister to tell us what will be the next. Are they going to give our girl protection, or they will be continue to be looted by unknown gunmen within the university?
Simon Mijok is the Dean of Student Affairs at the University of Juba. He declined to comment, saying the university administration will issue a press statement soon. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Still on student affairs, four medical students from South Sudan are stranded in Cuba after finishing their medical school. Bona Ball is the leader of South Sudanese students studying in Cuba. Ball says he has been communicating with officials in Juba about plane tickets for his colleagues so that they can return home.
I've been in touch with them, the South Sudan Embassy in Ethiopia. They never sent me back the message. So last in, I think February, when they heard about the situation about the two students who were sick, they asked me so that I could send for to them the letter. I sent to them like that we are going to have a student who are going to graduate in July, and they don't have ticket yet, but they never replied me back. They didn't actually reply me back when I'm talking to them about something concerning the ticket or the situation of the student.
Who is your contact at the South Sudan Embassy in Addis Ababa?
Peter Kolmawal is the one who is the educational attach in the embassy in Ethiopia.
You are saying you wrote to the education attache at the South Sudan Embassy in Addis Ababa and he did not reply you. Do you know why he is silent?
Yeah, I've written too many letters, you know. And then, like, recently when the student graduated, they published even in the Facebook page, and, you know, they tried to congratulate them, but they never sent them the ticket. So I tried to communicate with Peter Kaur, and, he never replied me back. He said that he was going to forward it. Every time I tried to send a message to him, he actually told me, like, for him, is there just, like, a route to the Minister of Higher Education. So he does not know what is happening in the ministry. This is the problem.
How many students finished their studies at the Latin America Medical School and are ready to travel back to South Sudan?
There are only five students. There are only five students. You know, the student scholarship gives you vacancies and all. We are doing medicine. We are around 26 students. So the first batch who came in 2012, they only just finished. There are five students. By next year, there will be seven students graduated there, and then the other year will come, there will be nine students.
When you graduate from a medical school, you're supposed to do your housemanship. Is that the case with the students who are stranded in Cuba?
Yeah, they finish everything. In the scholarship, everything is included. The scholarship that was given, the sixth year is the internship. So they did the internship already. They have finished everything. They are given their degrees. They are just stranded there. They only have 20 days to leave Cuba. You know, they are living in the residence and the school residence. And that residency is you are just allowed to stay there for 20 days after the graduation, because there are some students who are going to come to replace you. So they are just there up now.
Why do you want the government to pay for the tickets of these students?
We signed documents in the Cuban embassy in Ethiopia that we are going to return back to our country once we finish, and the ticket will be paid by the government of South Sudan. I know these people, these students who just got these five doctors, the ticket were paid by the Ministry of Higher Education, by the government. So we don't know why they are not paid the ticket to go back home right now. This is a problem.
That's Vulnerable, a leader of a South Sudanese student studying in Cuba. He was speaking to me from Havana yesterday via WhatsApp. A South Sudanese nurse at the military hospital in Juba has received a medal which recognize her for exceptional courage and devotion to victims of armed conflict or natural disaster. The medal also recognizes exemplary service or pioneering spirit in the area of public health or nursing education around the world. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, handed Kadi the award certificate issued by the ICRC Secretariat in Geneva. The 55-year-old Second Lieutenant Rosemary Kadi Giang was awarded for her work at the military hospital in Juba. She says the award is a big boost to her morale at work.
This award is really motivate me in my work, so that it is so my student work hard, so that they will get this motivate also.
Kadi is among the 26 health officials who have won a similar prize across the world. She says working as a nurse in a military hospital in a country like South Sudan has many challenges.
What has inspired me to be a nurse is a God's will. When I was small, I think I will study hard so that I will be a nurse to help my people who are suffering from disease during the war, then I will help them. That is why I animate myself, but not me, is God. And then I became a nurse to save my country.
Benjamin Yakira is ICRC's program manager at Juba Military Hospital. He says many nurses at the hospital stayed at home at the peak of South Sudan's 5-year fighting. Yakira says Kadi was always available to help wounded soldiers who needed medication.
Rosemary would come in the morning and she would do 3 straight shifts and work for 24 hours when the other nurses were not present in the ward. She never complained, not one single time. I don't remember Rosemary asking for an incentive or for food, and she never complained that the workload was too much or ICRC staff were pushing her too much.
The head of the International Committee of the Red Cross delegation in South Sudan says Second Lieutenant Kadi showed courage and dedication to save the lives at the military hospital in Juba. James Reynolds says Kadi is the first nurse in South Sudan to be awarded a prestigious prize for explicit work.
This is an award for dedication towards patients, often in times of conflict. So it is not a monetary award as such, but it's really, I think, given the rarity and the unusualness of the award, its value is honorific.
Reynolds says South Sudan ceasefire is holding across the country and the number of people receiving treatment for gun assaults remains high.
Since the signing of the revitalized agreement, the kind of direct confrontation in the conflict between IO and the government forces has clearly diminished, but we still see in pockets of the country quite high levels of violence between ethnic groups linked to cattle raiding. So we've seen more or less the same number of people admitted to those two structures with bullet wounds in the past 6 months as we saw in the 6 months corresponding a year ago. So I think there's still quite high levels of violence, which is a worry.
Rosemary Kadi Giang joined nursing in 1991 in Kapweta, serving in military health facilities during South Sudan's first fight for independence, helping wounded soldiers. She attained the rank of a second lieutenant in the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Consequences for Kleptocrats is the title of a new brief by The Sentry, an investigative arm of the NAF project. Joshua White, the author of the report, makes a case that deploying financial pressure on South Sudanese elites who use the country's finances for personal gains is essential to mitigate corruption. White says using multifaceted strategy that includes network of sanctions and anti-money laundering practices could help hold corrupt South Sudanese officials accountable.
And what our investigations at the Sentry have found is that transactions in U.S. dollars by South Sudanese elites is a common way in which they loot money, they loot assets from crimes that have occurred inside South Sudan and squirrel them away, squirrel that money away to bank accounts and physical property really around the world, as in places as far away as Australia and the UAE.
One of the tools that the U.S. Treasury Department has employed is the use of sanctions, and the report mentions a few South Sudanese officials who've been sanctioned by the U.S. as well as the U.N. And, you know, your report specifically mentions Gregory Vasili and Obach William Olawo, who were sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury Department. In the case of Treasury sanctions, can you say, based on your reporting and investigations, if they have been effective?
So I think what is really important for folks to understand is that there has been an evolution in terms of the approach that the United States government and specifically the Treasury Department have employed sanctions to bring meaningful consequences to people like Obach William and Gregory Vasili, so that it's much more difficult for them to access the international financial system and send money across South Sudan's borders in U.S. dollars and have access to really the U.S. Economy in a way that perhaps otherwise they could have gained access. So we have seen that the approach of network sanctions, where the United States not only lists an individual, but rather sanctions companies affiliated with them, those who are working to provide them with financial or other material support, are also being included in the sanctions actions. And this makes it much more difficult for people, such as the two individuals that you named, to be able to recover financially, to be able to circumvent the sanctions by putting assets in the names of their associates. So we have seen, as a result of this kind of approach, meaningful impact.
How complicated is it to catch financial crimes and prosecute them? Because we've seen reports of illicit funds being used outside of South Sudan to buy new homes or what have you. But when it comes to holding officials accountable, that seems to come slow.
The challenge for financial institutions around the world when it comes to South Sudan is knowing what the risks are. You know, what we don't want to have happen is for banks to pull out of the region and to refuse to provide financial services to people in South Sudan and elsewhere that we want to be able to do legitimate business. But the Treasury Department has issued an advisory, actually two, the first on the money laundering risks associated with senior South Sudanese political officials, and the second highlighting the role of the senior associates of corrupt foreign officials involved in human rights abuses around the world that really help banks understand what they should be looking for in terms of the financial crimes that some of these senior officials that we've reported on in South Sudan have been involved in. And I think understanding what to look for in terms of what this pattern of illicit activity reveals is really key to taking action to disrupt it.
That was Joshua White, author of the Central Report, Consequences for Kleptocrats. White is the Director of Policy and Analysis at the Century. He was speaking to my colleague Ayen Dengbior yesterday here in Washington. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, traders in Juba Town accuse city council officials of imposing fake taxes. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how has technology impacted your life?
When I want information, I just pick my phone. I just go to Google, and all the information that I want, I get it just right where I stand.
It made me to be so social to people, like on Facebook. I've known so many people, knowing how they are going on in life, and also on WhatsApp, chatting with my friends.
It's educative to me as well, because if I need to know something about history, something about a disease, something about some medicine, I just go and read about it online.
When I need information, I don't necessarily have to go to the library. All I need to do is just pick up my tablet and I Google whatever I want to know about whilst in the comfort of my home.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Business and Employers Federation is accusing Juba City Council officials for the recent price hikes in the markets. The chairman of the federation says Juba City Council officials are not following taxation laws in South Sudan. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Jalal Abdallah Doka, chairperson of the Jubek State South Sudan Business and Employers Federation, addressed the media today in Juba. Speaking in Arabic, he says Juba City Council officials have imposed unnecessary taxes on traders operating in Juba Town.
Most of the traders coming to us do tell us that there is a mayor's service fee charged on them. We asked the mayor about this, and they told us that it is a development fund. But we say if it is a development fund, This has already been allocated by the government during the passing of the budget by the parliament.
Abdallah says the Federation has commissioned a study to find out the causes of skyrocketing prices of goods and services in the capital and across the country.
In the coming days, we are going to organize for a press conference to tell the public the causes for high prices and who are the people behind this. And among the causes of rising prices of goods in the capital, the city council is one of them.
He says the Federation wants to register businesses across the country to understand challenges facing traders.
First, we want to know the right number of businesses in the state. And after knowing the right number, we will want to know categories. We want to know how many traders are South Sudanese and foreigners, and of this, how many are men and women.
Ai Duang Ai is the chairman of the Business and Employers Federation in South Sudan. He says Juba City Council officials are not organized.
For City Council to enter into the work of Chamber of Commerce and say don't charge or register business traders, this is not its work. It is the work of the Chamber of Commerce and business community. All businesses from small scale and whole scale, it is the responsibility of the Chamber of Commerce and business community. The City Council has no responsibility over this. The City Council is to organize for us land, it is responsible to clean our shops, and we pay its service fee through the Chamber of Commerce.
I sought reporters' letters from top government officials, including the minister in the office of the President Mike Ayi and Speaker of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly Anthony Lino Makana, authorizing the Federation to address the price hikes in the market. Thick Mayardit, the deputy mayor of Juba Town, says his office will not work with the Business and Employers Federation.
They are just only doing so that they spoil the government, so that every citizen will be talking that the government is the one doing this. But they are individuals which are doing that. The Minister of Trade, the Minister of Finance, and the Minister in the Office of the President, and the Minister of Constitutional Affairs, which they don't have right to do that.
Traders in markets around Juba Town have accused Juba City Council officials of charging exorbitant taxes, forcing the traders to increase prices, a move that could hurt ordinary South Sudanese who are struggling to put food on the table for their loved ones. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan could be a tourist attraction if officials invest in wildlife conservation. Sam Midnick, a international reporter, recently visited game reserves near the South Sudan-Congo border and says she saw a variety of wild animals.
They have elephants, and apparently there was a finding of a special kind of elephant. Forest elephants that was found in South Sudan, which was a very significant find according to experts who had been there and were researching it. So, yeah, there are animals and large animals, and there are traces of them. When we were walking, as they were doing the patrol, the team would stop, they'd look at the ground, they'd show the footprint of an animal that they had seen, they'd write it down to document it, and they also have these camera traps. So the camera traps take thousands of pictures. And I saw on those photos that there were animals. I'm trying to remember what kind they were. But yes, there are large animals, badger bats, bongos, antelopes, forest buffaloes.
And what about the flora and fauna? You know, does it have any kind of special fauna that the experts are concerned about?
I think in general the concern is just that it is a very rich, it's a very rich area for flora and fauna. Again, from what I'm told from the experts, that area in particular, I think the concern is if the parks aren't taken care of, if they're not properly patrolled, and also if the land, the residents around the parks do certain cultivation methods where they it's called slash and burn, that they call it. So they pretty much burn the land, they light fire, burn the land to clear it, to cultivate. But this can allow them, you know, if they continue to do it, they could potentially encroach on the land for the reserve. And so I think there's just some concern that if different methods aren't taken and if poaching and things like that continue, then the parks won't be preserved and the flora and fauna could be in danger.
How do you say the name of the game park again that you were in?
Bayer Petwa.
That's near the Congo border, right? Were you concerned about the Ebola outbreak in that country?
No, I was there. Well, I was there actually when it was going on, but no, at that point, wasn't very concerned. But yes, it's right along the border, and the border is quite porous. So there, I mean, it is possible that someone could just come through, and there's not a lot of, there's not like a huge demarcation there where there's like border patrol people there. So it's very close, and the LRA, I mean, years ago they came into the town, and there was a big presence of the Lord's Resistance Army, which was active in the Congo. So the community there has remnants of that. But Ebola, people weren't too concerned at the time, but yes, it could be something that could happen because it's right on the border.
Do you feel like this is something that South Sudan as a government can develop, you know, in terms of their hopes and desires to do economic development? Tourism, is that something that's on the agenda?
So I spoke to the tourism industry actually about it, and they are pushing for it. They want more tourism to come to the country. They've just had recent talks with Uganda and with Tanzania, with the Eastern African community, and they are trying to work with them to make it easier to get from country to country on a tourist visa. So it's definitely something they're thinking about. I think that, I mean, they said no money last year was given to tourism development. And so that just sort of says right now where the priorities of the country are. It's definitely not towards tourism, but the ministry is thinking about that.
That's reporter Sam Mednick speaking with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam about the vast tourist attraction in South Sudan.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
And we are waiting to hear from you on that number, +1 202-630-8011. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Nipe Danda Moja by Makadem.
Kama kutulia wazo mkazo Kitabu takatifu Kikahimiza Yakazari tumfe Jana mchana kabla ya usiku wa kuamkia leo uliniomba urafiki Mambo ya kauba Twitter Facebook barua pepe SMS Ikawa ni simu kila mara Mikawa tusha ya zuru naona tuwe wapishe mwanangu Sinema tumezi kwenda bora tuwe waigizaji Mpenzi, jouni pe mapenzi Wewe mpenzi, mie na choka na mafo
Nipe denda moja, nipe nikukumbuke
We've been listening to Makadem with the song Nipe Danda Moja. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Shakupa, sio ishu sio kikwazo Nizikufa kwa kidonda sioja Moyo wangu kwa kumetu